Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. In 1969, a survey of Texas Baptists revealed that 90% felt their state's abortion laws should be loosened. So when did these beliefs about abortion in particular become such a change in American life and politics when we're thinking about religion? That's the topic of a new book by Marie Griffith. She's the director of the Danforth Center on Religion and Politics at Washington University. And the book is called Moral Combat: How Sex Divided American Christians and Fractured American Politics. It's an exploration of gender roles, sexual identity, and how that's played out in our politics. She was in Central Illinois yesterday for a lecture at the University of Illinois, and she joined me in our Urbana studios yesterday afternoon to talk about her book. Marie, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me.
Oh, great to be here.
So you make the argument that sex and issues around sexuality, whether we're talking about same-sex marriage or gender identity or women's rights, including the right to have an abortion, all of this is really a proxy for really a discussion or an argument about change, and it's sort of a battle of change versus tradition. Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look back really over the past century, back even to the birth control movement, you can see that these issues come up over and over again around sex and sexuality and gender. And one reason I wrote the book was to ask the question, why is that? Why are Americans constantly battling over sex in our churches and in our politics? And so exactly as you said, what I came to realize was that these aren't so much only battles over sexual morality. They're certainly that, but they're really about a fear of change versus a kind of attitude of welcoming change and progress. So, you know, we see over time these kind of two sides crystallizing in some way. And one of them is really very fearful that if you open up and loosen sexual morality and gender roles and things like that, ultimately, America will fall apart. I mean, that fear has been sort of articulated over and over again. And whereas the other side that's kind of coalesced over the years, the progressive side, is really thinking about this in terms of inclusivity, rather, and opening the door and you know, equality and justice for everyone. So you really have very competing attitudes toward change and tradition.
And there is the fear in that, and there's also the historical context. But I wonder, there's also this sort of this notion of God talk. And I do think everyone, why do you think we're so interested in Americans as we always want to claim God is on our side? Mm. And even though this is a country that's sort of founded on the separation of church and state, you write about this, that this idea of God supporting us is also something that's really important to us.
Yes. Well, and this is a theme really that goes way back in our history, a sort of American, and you know, there's a bit of hubris to it, as I think you're suggesting, that somehow we can imagine what God's will is and live that out. And I am sorry to say, I did see that over and over again among Americans in the churches who were absolutely certain of one side or the other, you know, of kind of where God stood, quote unquote, on a particular issue. And this comes, you know, for many people, it comes from their reading of the Bible or from their understanding of the history of church doctrine and other kinds of things. But it's really remarkable how certain, you know, people can be about issues that for some of us reading the Bible don't look all that certain, really.
And do you think those are related, that fear of change versus the notion that God has to be on our side?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that oftentimes the fear of change does go with a sort of sense of this is what God wants, you know, and God wants us to be sexually pure within marriage. He only wants marriage to be between one man and one woman. You know, men should sort of be the heads of the households and women sort of obeying. Of course, abortion is out of bounds. All of these kinds of ideas tend to go with a sort of certainty that these rules are in the Bible and that God has laid them down absolutely clearly, with utter clarity. And anyone who questions that is a sinner or simply deceived in their reading of the Bible and tradition.
My guest is Marie Griffith. She's the author of a book called Moral Combat: How Sex Divided American Christians and Fractured American Politics. And so you talk about fear as fear of being this driving force, but then you kind of go into the different kinds of fears. And you really, I think it's not just a fear of change, but there's a couple other things going on here, including fear of people who don't look like us. Mm-hmm. And you think, how does that get reflected in all of this?
Yeah, I sort of write about three fears in particular that I kind of discern throughout all of this. The first is really a fear of women and particularly women's power, and in particular women's sexual power and sexual freedom, women's ability to sort of control their own lives, you might say. The second is a fear of sort of people who don't look like us. It's often racialized. Sometimes it's in a religious context. There's a long Protestant fear of Catholics in America, for instance, and today's big fear often is seems to be of Muslims in some quarters. And then the third is what I mentioned earlier, this fear that somehow America is going to fall into decline as a result of sexual sin, ultimately. And these three fears crop up in the stuff over and over again, and oftentimes Christian leaders are sort of stoking, I think, those fears in their people, in the pews, very effectively. And it's a very effective tool for political mobilization.
And so you write that in a historical context, the debate doesn't seem to be as intractable as it is now. Mm-hmm. And that's the crux of your work, trying to understand the historical context of this. And so as we've sort of described, almost it's almost as if there's two different religions of Christianity when you look at the right versus the left. You write that this actually stemmed from the modern day right women's rights movement. Can you take us back to that and why you think that's where this started?
Yeah, I really do sort of think it all sort of started with suffrage in a way. I don't mean that overly simplistically, but, you know, when women got the right to vote in 1920, it was a profoundly controversial thing.
When white women got the right.
White women, absolutely, right. Yes. And I do say that. I point that out right. In the book. But you're absolutely right. So when white women got the right to vote in 1920, it was profoundly controversial. And there were plenty of people, women and men, who did not want women's rights, did not want women to have the right to vote, thought that this was a terrible path for the country to go down. And from there, you know, these fights over gender and power and sex just escalated over time. And as you say, these aren't debates so much between religious people versus secular people, although sometimes they look like that too. But they're really deep debates within Christianity itself, within Protestant communities and Catholic communities, and then between Protestants and Catholics oftentimes. So you have this internal debate over what it means to be a Christian and what Christian morality consists of that deepens and deepens over time and comes really to define our politics in all kinds of ways.
And you think this is because this comes back to interpretations of Christianity and the role of men and women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I think it comes down to women's roles, but, you know, just also a sense of should women be sexually pure? Is that crucial for sort of Christian virtue and that sort of thing? And whereas for progressive Christians, they would say those things don't matter. What matters about the Christian life is caring for the poor, seeking justice for all people, equality. It's really, you know, two very different ways of thinking about what is central to Christian faith.
And then I wanted to ask you about the racial component of mm-hmm. it. Why was it important for you to make the distinction that the women's rights, the right for women to vote, was particularly around white women?
Right. So I would say that race has been a key component of all of these debates all along the way. And as we know, there's not American history is drenched in racial politics and fights about racism and racial justice and all of that. So from the very beginning, yes, part of the, frankly, the impetus against the suffrage movement was the fear that black women would also get the right to vote. And Southern Jim Crow white and white people, men and women, made that argument over and over again, you know, very vocally. So they're very open about it. But, you know, race also has mattered in the abortion debate. It mattered in the birth control debate. So the sort of fear that that this opening of sexual morality, again, it's not just about women, but about the fear of sort of black sexuality, you know, oftentimes.
And so that brings us to, as we're talking about this, I can't help but think of the 2016 election. And you write that history would dictate that you think people voted for President Trump not in spite of his views of women or the stories of how he treated women, but actually because of that, including the majority of white women, the white female vote that he got. Can you explain the historical context of that?
Sure. And let me just clarify, I certainly don't mean to say that the election came down only to women and gender politics. There were many other issues, too. But I absolutely think that people who were drawn to Trump in many ways were drawn to that kind of, you know, what people interpreted at least as a kind of masculine, you know, no holds barred kind of macho personality and style of politics over and against feminism, which is what Hillary Clinton really represented. So, you know, I think that people kept asking the question, why are evangelicals supporting Trump, or why are these conservative Christians who are so consumed about sexual morality supporting a philandering adulterer who's done the kinds of things he's done? And I think part of the reason for that was there was just all this gender hierarchy bound up in that. It was about what we used to call patriarchy, right? That he's kind of just representing a kind of masculine guy that I guess some men would like to be themselves.
And women also want.
They do. I mean, that's a harder one to explain. And it was hard to explain with Roy Moore a few months later, right? And that election in Alabama, which he lost barely, but he won in the white women's vote in Alabama again. So, you know, I think it really does. There's a certain, you know, misogyny that's bound up in this. I'm sorry. I think that is just absolutely the case. And you can see it when you see the kinds of critiques that were made of Hillary Clinton. Again, the embodiment of a feminist, you know, woman who was independent and pro-choice and equal and all of that. There was a preference ultimately for the sort of Trumpian character, regardless of morality.
So your book came out in 2017, and you write at the end of the book about the backlash to this. And I'm thinking about the Women's March, which you write about, but I'm also thinking about the many women we're now seeing running for office. Has it surprised you?
No. It's made me happy personally, because you really see this galvanizing effect, right, of people saying, wait a minute, we've been asleep here. And, you know, we need to make sure that we take a public stand in favor of women's rights, in favor of immigrants and other people that Trump was talking against and very badly about, in take a stand for African-Americans and for racial justice in this country and for Black Lives Matter. So, you know, I think it's had this tremendously galvanizing effect, both in the national and local marches that have been going on around the country, but also, as you say, in candidates and voting patterns. And, you know, these midterm elections coming up are going to be really, really interesting.
And I also wanted to ask you about the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. which has also happened in the past 6 months. And we've seen this outpouring of stories of people sharing their stories of sexual assault, of sexual harassment. And that's even happening in churches. And I mentioned in particular here in Illinois, the pastor of the very popular evangelical megachurch, Willow Creek, he just announced he's stepping down early this week amid allegations of sexual misconduct. Where do you see the Me Too movement in all of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that's very interesting. The Bill Hybels story is who you're mm-hmm. referring to. And, of course, Hybels, in his sort of speech to his congregation, stood up, I believe, with his wife and his family.
He did, this week.
And was, you know, roundly applauded by the congregation for making such a, as they interpreted, open and honest sort of stand. And they were sort of professing their love for him. And we do often see that in evangelical church settings, a pretty quick willingness to forgive, a desire for it all to be okay, you know, and especially someone who's been as beloved and influential as Bill Hybels. But at the same time, I am very heartened by the Me Too movement. I'm heartened that women are feeling gradually empowered to tell these stories and not to feel silenced or afraid to articulate this. I think we'll see more of that as time goes on. And churches will really have to deal very openly with that across the Protestant Catholic spectrum.
Where do you think we go from here?
Well, I'd like to see more of that, of sort of open and honest discussion and debate of these sorts of things. I'd like us to have a better national conversation about feminism and what these ideals are. It worries me that sometimes younger women think that, you know, they kind of have negative associations about feminism, even when they kind of live and express feminist ideals, as I see them anyway. So I think we really do need a big national reckoning about gender justice alongside racial justice and others. And I think we are seeing the beginning of that. I'm actually hopeful.
Marie Griffith is the author, most recently, of Moral Combat, How Sex Divided American Christians and Fractured American Politics. Thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
The 21st is supported by the Beckman Institute for Advanced Science and Technology, presenting Sandra Singh Low, host of the NPR.org podcast, The Lowdown on Science, for the Smith Group JJR Lecture, noon on Friday, April 20th, in the Beckman Institute Auditorium.